Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, my friend, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. The one problem is that it was like in the 70s a week ago, and now we got some rain coming in, and now it's going to be in the 50s. So yeah. I don't like that's not good for my golf game, Jim. But other than that, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I actually look at it a little different than you. The bad weather is probably good for my golf game. It's kind of like how my buddy said about the Mets. When the Mets get an off day, it means at least they didn't lose.
That's true.
Well, if I can't get on the golf course, it means I didn't lose. All right.
That's fair.
I could still just project. If I had gotten out today, I would have played really well. And if I do go out in the cold weather, I've got an excuse.
That's true. I actually, not to start this off on golf as we always do, but so in the springtime when it's mid-50s, I actually like to try to go out and play golf because the golf course is, there's nobody out there. So you have basically the course to yourself because it's like, we could wait for another 70-degree day. Nah, I'll go out there when it's 50 and there's nobody on the course and have it all to myself.
Well, what's interesting is a couple weeks ago when we first started to get the nice weather, we go out to the course and it was packed, okay? Mm-hmm. During the week, it was packed, as you might expect. Last week, we hit upon a nice day and went out, and I fully expected to have battle a crowd there. Pull in, nobody's there. Nobody. My buddy and I, we played 18 holes in 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow. That's a record.
Maybe it's because we played so well, Dustin. Didn't need
That's
very many shots.
True. That's right.
I'm bluffing. No, that wasn't it. And we weren't rushing, just smoothly going, but nobody around us. You just hit, you went, hit again. So it was, it's very pleasant that way. And I am fortunate around here with the public courses are not crowded typically during the week. And we try to go at, not at 9 a.m. where the early folks go. Yeah. Don't go later, 3 or 4 o'clock when you bump into the leagues. So that's what you get for being old and not working full time, Dustin. You get that time off during the week.
That makes it better. Well, and then with my job, I have flexibility. Obviously, I can kind of come and go as I please. It's not always the best idea to do that, but around this time when there's not a lot going on, I try to sneak out maybe once every couple weeks at around 11 o'clock or so and see if I can squeeze in or at least get to the driving range.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. All right. Hey, let's move on. How about we start talking some football? We got through the draft last week, Dustin. Kind of wanted to get your general take on it. Wasn't supposed to be a really strong draft. We talked about this last week. I'm a draft guy. You said you just kind of keep track of things online.
Yes. Yeah. I just, it doesn't really interest me that much, the television portion of it. I think we talked about, if you're a big fan or if you're covering it, it is kind of interesting to know, what does a team value? Are they, do they want to trade? The logistics of it do get kind of interesting. But in terms of like the 4 hour show or the 8 hour show that's on Saturday afternoon, I don't ever need to watch that again.
Well, what I find fascinating about it is like you were talking about how the different teams value players versus how the experts, of which there's a thousand of them. And it was fascinating to me as an Eagles fan. I saw one of the recaps of the Eagles draft. They were, I think, trying to express how well did the Eagles do versus the consensus? So Mekhi Lemon, their first round draft pick, who I think they got with the number 20 pick, the consensus was he would go like around 12th or 13th. So by getting him at number 20, that was a value. And they went over every draft pick and they use the consensus of the media, the experts, as the way to evaluate, why don't they go back in a couple of years and evaluate themselves? I would love to see that, how that consensus really turned out.
Yeah, that's always the biggest complaint, is like you get all these draft grades and, you know, things like draft evaluations and things like that. And that's fine. Like, we all want that. We all crave that sort of information and that sort of opinion. I can't think of the word, insight, but it really doesn't matter. Like, you don't get a good idea of it until 3 years later, probably, at least.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at, there's how many number one quarterbacks felt like locks, like they were going to change the franchise, and then it ends up they get traded or they, you know, perform below expectations. Like, I think back to, as a somebody who loves the Colts, the even back in the 90s, Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf, that was a big debate. Who goes number one? And Peyton Manning, like, if they would have taken Ryan Leaf, we might still be playing in the RCA, though, Jim. Probably doesn't mean much to. So it's just interesting to see how they value and how they kind of evaluate these sort of things in the immediate, as opposed to 3 years down the line. I don't know. Maybe somebody does do that. But there needs to be somebody who just evaluates the draft 3 years after the fact. That's what they do every 3 years, is they evaluate each draft class. Because I think that would be an interesting topic too.
Well, the thing where I get impressed with, and I'll say this is also something you realized multiple years later, is when you look back and if a team traded up for a player, mm-hmm. which truly expresses we value him more than probably other people do, and how that turns out. And I think the absolute best example of it was the Chiefs traded up to get Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, right.
To me, lots of credit there. Whereas you often hear the Patriots getting a lot of credit for drafting Tom Brady late in the draft. I give them credit for the pick. But if they really thought he was that good, they passed up on him four or five times prior to picking right. him also. So, I'm a little bit less complimentary.
Yeah, here's another thing that interests me too. It's like, so I can't remember who they trade. I can't remember who they traded with now. It was in the second round. The Colts traded with, it might have been Pittsburgh. I think it was Pittsburgh now that I look at it. So the Colts had the number 47 pick and the Steelers had the number 53 pick, and they swapped. Now, I think there was I think the Colts may have got an extra third rounder or something. I don't remember the details of it, but at number 47. So the Colts probably had somebody in mind that they wanted, but also when you're at that point, do they say, we've got three guys that we feel good about and we don't value one more than the other. So we don't care if, you know, one of those other six teams in between us and Pittsburgh doesn't draft this guy or drafts this guy, then we feel pretty good about options two and three on our board over here. So that's kind of interesting to me too. Like, how much, like, what is the evaluation? Like, what do you feel like? Is it the same position? Because the Colts ended up taking a linebacker at number 53. So was there two linebackers that you really liked or three linebackers that you really liked and say, if we don't get this guy, we still feel pretty good about this guy? Or was it more, if they take this linebacker, okay, well, we still need a guard. Here's the guard we're going to take that we need equally as much. So there's just little caveats like that. Cause you look at it and you're like, why would you trade six spots when you can just get your guy? But I mean, it worked. I think it worked out for him. We won't know for 3 years, Jim, if it worked out for him. But those are the little intricacies that I think are interesting in this situation, too.
And those are the things that I wish we would know more about, get more of that information. Sometimes it sneaks out later. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And I'm not sure if it's, we don't mind trading back because there's two or three guys, and if we lose the one, you know, there's one A, one B, one C,
yeah,
and would be satisfied with any one of them. As much as it's, boy, there's just no guy that we feel that good about in our current pick. So, you know, why not accumulate some extra, you know, lottery picks in the third or fourth round? The one that gets me, though, is when doing those kind of trades is, I guess there's some logic to it. Well, from some prior dealing, we have an extra third round pick, so we don't mind trading it. Or we trade for a third round pick because we don't have any picks in that round. And, you know, to me, wait a minute, it should be a value trade no matter what, whether you shouldn't base it on, I want to get an extra third pick, or, you know, or I have an extra third pick, or I don't have a third pick, and that's why I'm making the deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think you always want to try to get what's best, but I mean, dude, I gotta feel like if you were in one of those war rooms, I've gotta feel like there's a list of players at like each position, and do you like if you're Philadelphia and I'm Indianapolis, and we agree to a trade, and the Colts say, okay, we'll give you this, the number 40 pick, but we want an extra third round pick. Do you feel good about the guys that you have? Like, do you think that there are 2 third round guys that you can get at a high value? Like, what's the science behind that? Do you feel like you can trade that third round pick to get another pick, or throw it, you know, in some other sort of deal? There's just basically what we're learning here, Jim, is that we would like to be in a war room on draft day. How this actually goes down in the thought process behind it. Because there's a lot more than just, we want this guy, let's pick this guy, or this guy's off the board, let's go to this next. There's a lot more that goes into it. And I mean, I know this isn't new science to anybody, but that part of it to me is always fascinating. How do they come to these decisions? What do they value most? What goes into, like, the trading for picks in the same draft, to me, I could see where if you said, we'll trade our third round pick in this draft, we don't really like anybody in this draft, and we're going to wait till next year to get another second round or whatever. But the trading in this current draft, that's the one that always interests me and why they do it.
It is fascinating. And how you have, you know, like the Jets, it was just based on a tiebreaker that they didn't get the number one pick. Mm-hmm. And where they would have taken the quarterback, Mendoza, who was the one, I don't want to use the word sure thing, but he was the best bet. Just the luck of the tiebreaker, they got to look ahead and say, well, what's next year's draft look like? So anyway, I got a couple more examples for you. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about the NFL draft and everything that kind of subtly goes on when trading picks, evaluating players. Quarterbacks are, the most interesting, and they're the most worthwhile to talk about because they have the most effect on the teams. And we were talking about the value of trading up, down. Dustin, I think the best draft to study, I think it was the 2018 draft, and I know I've talked about this before on our show, if not with you. There were actually 4 quarterbacks selected in the top 10 picks, okay? If you don't recall, this is the draft that had Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Josh Rosen. All four were taken in the top 10. This was also the Saquon Barkley year coming out. And my theory, not being an expert NFL draft evaluator, but thinking I'm logical, And the Cleveland Browns had two picks that year, the number one and the number four pick. And yep. My non-expert opinion was this. Take Barkley at number one. The guy you know is absolutely the best running back. Mm-hmm. And the four quarterbacks, no matter who you talk to, you got a different answer of who the best one was. Do I think Baker Mayfield's a little better? I went back and looked at the evaluation. It seemed like Darnold was the consensus considered the best. Josh Allen, which I think is, accurate. They said had the highest ceiling but lowest floor. Yep. And I think Josh Rosen was considered the safest pick, maybe the highest ceiling. And Baker Mayfield, I think, was a bit of a wild card. So why not take Barkley and then take who's left at number four? Oh, by the way, they would have gotten Josh Allen at that point.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. Because I remember Josh Allen. You're probably correct because I don't remember what you said, but I believe you. I remember people like being very critical about Josh Allen and like, why is this guy considered? He was going to be of those four. He was thought to be the one with the biggest chance to bust, if I remember correctly.
Yes, yes, yes. Boom or bust was the evaluation.
He has been by far the best quarterback in that. I don't even know if Josh Rosen's still in the league. Baker Mayfield,
I don't think he is.
Sam Darnold just won a Super Bowl somehow. So that works. In terms of just, leading a franchise, Josh Allen has been by far the best. So could you imagine Cleveland if they had Saquon Barkley and Josh Allen? Now, the thing is, would it have worked out because it's Cleveland? We don't know. I mean, Buffalo was a pretty good landing spot for Josh Allen, but.
Well, which brings up another point I want to make, and you kind of alluded to it. Both Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold were essentially a bust with their first team. And their first teams were respectively the Cleveland Browns and the New York Jets.
Yeah.
Two awful franchises. But eventually, both those players, Baker Mayfield at Tampa Bay, became a pretty good NFL quarterback. And Sam Darnold, like you said, ended up playing well with the Vikings and then winning a Super Bowl with the Seahawks. So maybe that initial evaluation was actually pretty good. It's the environment you end up in that will determine your success or not.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate. And do you know, to me, what's really kind of odd is, and I get it, the quarterback is the guy that everybody thinks is going to be, the transformational guy, the guy that you can't pass up on, the guy that's going to be the face of the franchise. And probably the reason you draft the quarterback number one is because you're going to be able to sell a lot of tickets and it's going to help you financially. But if you were looking, like to me, wouldn't you want to boost your offensive line? Because if you're 3-14, your offensive line sucks. I don't know how else. Nobody's like, oh, they had a really good offensive line. They just couldn't. They didn't have the playmakers. No, if you have a good offensive line, you're probably at least a 500 football team. So, or hovering around there. And so to me, you would want to boost your offensive line and then say, can we trade for a quarterback? See how that goes. And then maybe the next year we look and whether it's through trade or through the draft or somebody, because how many quarterbacks do you see that go, maybe late first round or middle of the pack? I mean, the Tom Brady story, obviously. Drew Brees was a second round pick.
Brock Purdy.
Brock Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant. Yeah, there's a lot of examples of guys that have been selected in later rounds that have been just fine. So to me, it's more important to boost your offensive line with those high picks than it is to get the quarterback.
Dustin, you bring up an incredible point. And it's so incredible because I anticipated it and I did some homework. Okay. And we're going to get to that in a moment, but I think the, that specific draft again, that 2018 draft, I think it's such a great example and I love talking about it because I could pat myself on the back on my advice for the Cleveland Browns, but there was another first round quarterback that went that season. Okay. He wasn't one of that top four, those great four players. He actually went 32nd in the draft at the last pick of the first round. Do you recall who that was?
Ooh, I'm trying to think back now to 2018.
Does it help by me telling you you should know?
Nope. But I feel like, gosh, I wish I knew, because 2017, that wouldn't have been Lamar Jackson, right?
It would be. It would be.
Okay. I pulled that out of a hat. Now who's patting themselves on the back?
So arguably, after, you know, that top four, and I said, you know, arguably, you know, there I shouldn't have used the word consensus, but a lot of people, maybe a plurality, or, you know, thought Sam Darnold was the best bet, and yeah, were a little surprised that Baker Mayfield went ahead of him. But I think, you know, you could still argue now between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Some might argue that Lamar Jackson was the best of the whole lot. So that leads to the next discussion for you, Dustin, which is that, you talked about, do you get the quarterback first or do you build a team around him, like the offensive line? But don't you also, if there's one quarterback in this draft, Mendoza, who you, again, I'm not going to use the word sure thing, but at least a good bet, and boy, if you got that number one pick, don't you have to use that on that quarterback, because you don't know if you're going to get that opportunity again, versus the Jets, who had as bad a record but lost the tiebreaker. So, you know, they've accumulated draft picks. They look ahead to next year and said, you know what, we'll take Dustin's advice. Let's build a team and then get our quarterback next year.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting question. You have to be committed to the rebuild. Like, I think about, and Justin Fields hasn't been good since he left, but I think about Justin Fields in Chicago and how bad their offensive line, and it was almost like they weren't committed to, like, they were like, okay, we got Justin Fields now. And they just, like, refused to build their offensive line to be worth anything. So I don't have a problem with teams taking the quarterback number one, but then you have to be like, okay, We've got to surround him with better talent. We've got to improve the offensive line. We've got to make sure we have at least some semblance of a running game, which I know we've agreed on in the past. You don't have to have a Saquon Barkley level running back. You just have to have somebody who can get you 3 yards a majority of the time, and then get you some wide receivers. And to me, the offensive line is the biggest, because if you don't have time in the NFL to throw, then you're screwed. Like, that's just more so that, like, it's college, over. You can kind of, yeah, in college, you can kind of dance around. You're not always dealing with, unless you're playing like an Alabama, or in some instances, it has been Penn State, where you're playing two quality NFL level edge rushers. But at the NFL, those are all NFL quality edge rushers. So yeah, there's no, I don't have a problem with it, but then Oakland's got to say, okay, what's our next area of concern? And it's got to be, we have to get, I'm not going to pretend to know the Raiders roster. I have no idea. But you have to say, we got to get one of the best left tackles out there, and we got to, you know, improve the offensive line at certain positions, whatever. So just be committed to it. But I do, I just feel like, look at but to me, like, San Francisco, and this is, Brock Purdy's a good quarterback, but I don't think Brock Purdy is like the world's best quarterback. But look, they had a good receiving core, they had good running backs, and they had a great offensive line. And that's why he was, like, they threw three different guys in that season and they were all successful. So,
go ahead, finish your thought.
I was just going to say, so could you win with anybody in that quarterback? I don't think anybody, but I think that there are a lot of quarterbacks that could have been successful in San Francisco surrounded by that level of talent.
That's the great point. And that's the variable that people don't recognize enough, is building the team around you. And the NFL history is just loaded with players. We gave the two examples of Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield of not excelling really until they landed on a good team. Now, the Raiders, I think their strategy, which is smart, is they brought Kirk Cousins in. Mm-hmm. So Mendoza doesn't have to start on day one, which in a way it buys them some time to build the rest of the team around Mendoza.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. If he doesn't have to start day one, because I do feel like if you just get beat up your first year, I feel like that. Now there have been some quarterbacks that have survived that, but if you get beaten up that first year, that has to hurt your confidence.
You become gun shy.
Yeah, and I was going to say it's probably gun shy, and you probably, or you're getting rid of the ball so quickly because you're afraid you're going to get sacked. So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's and Kirk Cousins had a lot of success on teams that probably didn't necessarily have the best talent around him. So I think that that would be a good guy. Whether he gets the job or not, it's going to be a good person to learn from in that locker room.
All right, Dustin, I told you I had done some homework, okay? And when we come back, we're going to use my homework, and I'm going to quiz you, okay? So we're talking about where you invest, you know, do you need a top draft pick to get, is that where you need to get your quarterback? Could you get them in the later round? You know, examples like Tom Brady, Brock Purdy. I'm going to ask you a couple pertinent questions on this topic when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking all things NFL draft. We're having fun with this. And, you know, quarterback, my favorite topic. You need a quarterback to win, whether it's the collegiate level, NFL, high school, peewee football. That's the guy who touches the ball on every down. But when you look at the history of the NFL, and, you know, like we mentioned, maybe the greatest of all time, Tom Brady, when did he go? Fifth round, sixth round, whatever it was. Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. My team, the Eagles, they got Jalen Hurts late in the second round. So I wanted to know, do you have to invest the first round pick to get your quarterback, Dustin? So I did my homework. Of the 32 starting quarterbacks, how many do you think went in the first round? Don't try to calculate. Just off the top of your head, first instinct.
First instinct, I would think, I'm going to say 12.
12. 12. I think that is a really solid guess and would have really matched up with what I was thinking and what I was looking to prove, okay? So that's the way I roll, Dustin. I get a theory in my head, and then I go get statistics to support exactly what I think, all right?
Yep.
Lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Statistics, yep.
I got bit in the butt on this one, Dustin.
Okay.
23 of the 32 starting quarterbacks were first round draft picks. Get this. 19 of them went in the top 10.
Wow. Okay.
And 9 were number one draft picks.
Wow. Okay. Well, now we know.
See, I was, and what kind of led me to this a little bit was we had the discussion last week about Mendoza being the obvious number one draft pick. We all knew that was coming. And I wanted to know what was Kurt Cignetti's effect on this and going, you know, he was not considered a first round draft pick when he was in Cal a year ago. Right. 1 year in Cignetti's system, and he's the default automatic consensus number one pick. And I asked you the question that, what if it were Drew Aller who mm-hmm. got taken by Cursignetti in Indiana in this last year? And your response was?
He'd be a first-round pick. I don't know if he'd be number one overall, but I think he'd be a first-round pick.
And that's what led me into this discussion, because the Steelers got Drew Aller in the third round, and my thought process was, a year ago, if you had a Mendoza versus Drew Aller conversation, Mendoza finishing his year at Cal, Penn State, a team that was in the college playoff semifinals, I think a lot of people would have taken Drew Aller ahead of Mendoza. Here yeah. we are a year later, and, you know, I think a lot of people thought Drew Aller was taken too high in the third round. And my question to you is going to be, you know, how are we going to look at this in a year from now or 2 years from now in evaluating the quarterbacks in this draft? But there we go. Statistics come up and bite me and actually tell me it's probably the first round draft pick that's going to be the starter.
That's true. Now, what I would want to know is, I don't know if I can think of how to phrase this properly, but like, what's been the turnover for some of those first round draft picks? Because, for example, so Justin Fields was the starter for Chicago and then got replaced by Caleb Williams, another first, I think he was number one overall. I think Justin Fields was maybe top 10. I don't remember. So is there a correlation there between like teams that suck and consistently play? Well, the Bears had a good year last year, but teams that are at the bottom and they just keep rotating through their first round draft pick. If that makes sense. Like, are there four teams out there that are consistently rotating their quarterback because they can't find ways to win? Because that to me would, I mean, you would still be correct in that 23 starters are first round picks, but it's like, okay, well, do those teams not, those organizations not know how to draft? Or like, it almost makes it a moot point at that to me.
Well, I think, Dustin, the part of it that would be relevant is how many of these guys who are first rounders who are starters, they're starting for their second or third team though. And yeah, you know, going back to this 2018, those four picks in the, you know, top 10, two of them are starters, but it was only after they went to their second, third, or fourth team, even with Darnold. Because he was yeah. with the Jets, the Panthers, the Vikings, and the Seahawks. Now, he did have success with the Vikings, but that was his third team before he – but I guess the question becomes is there a pedigree, you know, that if you were a first-round draft pick, there was something there to that player?
I would – I mean, the the scouts and general managers and coaches and everybody that takes in like the scouting combine and pro days and watches film and all that. I mean, there's obviously they figured out a formula. So they're not like, and these draft analysts aren't doing this without some sort of inside intel. I don't think they're just looking at guys and being like, oh yeah, that's a first. Have you ever tried to project a draft pick? I have no idea what the hell I'm looking at. So they have some sort of inside intel, and there's probably a specific formula to this. So I think there's something to be said. Like they probably know when they do these interviews, they probably know what type of mindset, what type of attitude, all that kind of stuff, along with like the physical characteristics and the skills that you need to be successful. So I think that there is probably a level of those are the reasons why those guys are selected in the top, you know, in the first round or top 10 picks or whatever the case might be. So I do think that there is probably some legitimacy to those guys going so high and then some of them having success at maybe a more established franchise or a franchise with better talent around them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there is value to those evaluations. But I also wonder, too, if they suffer from groupthink. For several years now, we've seen you don't waste a top draft pick on a running back.
Yeah.
And now, you know, or spend a lot of money. The Eagles, I'm familiar with them, so that's why I use them as examples so much. You know, Howie Roseman by saying, you know what? The Giants refused to spend that big money on the running back. They didn't think that was worthwhile, was value. The Eagles said, okay, we'll pay him that big money.
Yeah.
It resulted in a 2,000-yard season in the Super Bowl.
Worked out pretty well for Philadelphia, didn't it?
Yeah. So now, you know, do you have the pendulum swing? And we've seen it the last couple of years.
How do I respond to this? I think that the Eagles were in a position to pay the running back as opposed to the Giants. It's like, well, our offensive line can't block anybody. So what does how much is what was Saquon's contract? Do you know?
A lot.
Okay. So, well, yeah. I didn't know if you had specific numbers, but
no, like, I didn't have the numbers.
Okay. That's okay. So, but my point is that the Giants are probably like, we're going to pay him $30 million to have a 700, 800 yard season because we just can't, our offense can't move the football. We don't have a good enough line. We don't have good enough receivers to, catch the defense off guard. Where Philadelphia says, you know what? We are a really good running back away from winning a Super Bowl. Yeah, we'll pay him the $30 million. So I think that that's part of it. I'm sure there is probably some level of groupthink in this. But I think in that specific scenario, the Eagles were in a much better spot to pay Saquon than the Giants were.
There is no doubt. You know, it's like pay the money to get you over the top. And that is exactly what happened. Saquon, with that Giants offensive line, would not have had 2,000 yards, maybe not even 1,000 yards behind that offensive line, and may have even gotten hurt because of it. His value to the Eagles was greater. But it kind of leads me to, you know, this draft. What was fascinating was that some of the very best players in this draft were in positions that traditionally now are not valued very much. Guys like Love, but he did go third. Safety Caleb Downs, you and I both see him enough in the Big Ten as a safety. Yeah. What a great player. Arvell Reese, again, another guy that we see in the Big Ten. He was a linebacker. So these things, positional value was not great. But I at least give teams credit for saying, this is a special player. I don't care the position. You bring them in.
Yeah, I mean, I think like it takes all 11 players to win at a high level in the NFL. So you have to, I mean, obviously more some positions are valued more than others, and I think that's certainly understandable. But if you feel good about where you're at other positions, at some point you just say, he's without doubt the best player on the board, and we like him. We think he fits well into our system. We're going to take him. So I do think that they, you know, I don't know what position the Cardinals are in to take a running back number three overall. But the Giants probably weren't in a good position to take Saquon Barkley number two overall anyway. So I do understand that. And the other part of this too is, Jim, it could be a similar situation to where, say, Jeremiah Love isn't working out for the Cardinals, but again, if you get to a team that's, hey, we're a running back away, all right, but we need some draft picks from you. So then there's also an element of, if this guy works out, great. If he doesn't, we think he can be a valuable trading piece at some point down the road. I think that this is, again, why I think you go into the war room, because I want to know, is that part of the equation? Is that part of the calculus that it is to drafting certain players? Do you feel like, if you take, I'm just using the running back because I think three is insanely high for a running back at this stage. He's a really good player, but is there again some sort of value where you say, you know, if there's another team, if there's a Minnesota Vikings or I don't know, Detroit Lions, do they feel like a Jeremiah Love could get them over the hump? And if so, could we get, you know, their first round draft pick? And then in 2 years, we have two first rounds, two second rounds, and we can really, you know, build around the core nucleus of this franchise. So there's a lot of interesting things going on here.
There is. And I just wonder how much is it, like we pointed out, the Cleveland Browns and New York Jets, they lose every year. So whatever strategy they're using, it's not working. And I wonder how much of that is all part of this. All right, we still got more to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He is Dustin. I am Jim. We started an earlier segment with me quizzing you. I do the research, I get the answers, then I ask you the question and expect you to give me an answer off the top of your head. So, Dustin, you wanted to turn the tables and ask me a question to start this segment. Go for it.
I did. And this is going to be an opinion, just kind of an essay here. You know, there are no wrong answers. It was said, and I think that you're a good person to ask this because this was occurred in your home state. New NFL draft record, 805,000, 820,000, I don't remember, over 800,000 people turned out for the draft. Do you believe that number?
No. Okay. I never believe any attendance numbers, Dustin.
Okay, we're on the same page then. Because this has been a thing for the NFL now for years where they overinflate the number. And so let me tell you my logic here. And this is why I think that they're always lying. There's two things. Number one, I grew up in Indiana, home of the Indianapolis 500. The racetrack is 2.5 miles long, 2.5 mile long racetrack. There are seats around the track for, I want to say 1.75 or 2 miles. I can't remember the exact number on it. That holds 257,000 people. The stands do.
How many?
257,000 people. That's how many seats they hold. When I look at Pittsburgh and so I always think in my mind, is this stretch of road or this area, is it 2 miles of traffic? And the answer is always no. Yet somehow they squeeze in 300,000 people to these areas. So I believe that Pittsburgh had a great showing. I would believe that 800,000 people throughout the weekend showed up to the draft, to the bars, to different, you know, specific locations. But I don't think there were 800,000 people in those designated areas specifically watching the NFL draft. And it's not a knock on Pittsburgh. I think they probably did have the best. They look like they put on a good show. And they probably did have the best attendance in terms of the NFL draft. I just don't believe 800,000 people were in those. I think there were two designated, like, I think they opened up Heinz Field. Is it still called Heinz Field?
No. It's like our some insurance company or something.
AccuSure. Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think they opened that up, and then they had the draft area. So I believe that there was a high total there. I just don't believe that almost a million people showed up for the NFL draft.
Well, my question for it is, these are estimates, but they'll say there were 810,313.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. A guy just walked in. Yes. 810,314. And I know they actually, how they do this, I've been told, is aerial photography, mm-hmm. where they measure, you know, how much is, you know, square footage, square miles. And if, you know, a square mile is filled up, it's X number of people. And that's how they do the estimates. But again, it's an estimate. And it reminds me, you know, Beaver Stadium, they will set a record for attendance. It was eight more people than there was last year. And you know, it's like, How in the world do you know? Because they're not keeping track of everyone who walks through the turnstile and how many people are there who are not, you know, fans by that. And, you know, they're part of security or concession stand and things like that. But it's, let's find out what the old record was and add 11.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So your point is valid. With that said, though, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think they put on a great show, did a great job.
I agree.
And again, I've mentioned this before, but whoever in the NFL front office said, you know what we should do with this draft? We should move it around. That guy deserves a big raise.
I think so too. I think that's great for all of the local economies. I mean, I'm sure Pittsburgh saw a huge boost in terms of like hotel and food and entertainment. I'm sure all those places saw a huge boost in financial. I can't even remember what I was thinking about there. They saw a big boost in terms of their what's it called? I can't think of the
economic
word.
Effect.
Yeah, let's just go with that. That wasn't the word I was thinking of. We'll go with that because I can't think of it. But yeah, I think that provides a nice boost for each city to be able to host an event like that.
Well, it really does, and I think it highlights the city. It gives the city a chance to put its best foot forward. And I really enjoyed the one in Nashville. Now, I've visited Pittsburgh enough, you know, when they show the different shots and – you know, the football field, I've been there. It's great. You know, the baseball field is fantastic. The bridges and rivers. It's a really nice downtown that they have in Pittsburgh. This highlighted it. A few years back, I got a chance to go to Nashville. What a great city that is.
Yeah.
And again, they showed it. They were in the area that was the fun area of Nashville. So it's a great way for these different communities to show off their cities, which is fantastic. But let's get back to the draft. I had another question. I think I may have brought this up to you before. How talented is Ohio State? They had four of the top 11 draft picks. And you know what? I think some of them coulda, woulda, shoulda gone higher.
Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. And I think I know they won a national championship last year, but I feel like you're still just, when you see that many players from one school near the top, you just think we couldn't get it done. And this happened in 2016, by the way, too. I can't remember what the number was, but I thought Ohio State had like 8 first round picks that year. Some ridiculous total. And they lost to Michigan State at home because Urban Meyer refused to feed Ezekiel Elliott that given day. Michigan State had a quarterback. I'll never forget this. So I think that's one of the things that you just has to be frustrating. It speaks again to the Ohio, and what a great recruiting tool in this world of NIL and transfer portal and all that stuff where people talk about how the money's the most important. And I understand that it's going to be a factor. But if you're able to be Ryan Day and say, hey, look, we produced four of the top 11 picks. Is that what she said?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So if you're able to do that, like it's a pretty good sell to high school recruits and any potential highly rated transfer portal pickups.
And just remember, the very best player in college football, Jeremiah Smith, didn't come out. And the quarterback, Julian Sain, who very well could have been a top 10 pick also, did not come out. So they could have had two more.
Yeah. So this would be then another question. Is there any chance, do you know where I'm going with this?
No.
That Jeremiah Smith would be the number one overall pick in next year's draft?
Yes.
You think so as a wide receiver?
Yes. Okay. I think in my mind, it just depends on, for example, the Raiders. Okay. They just picked their quarterback. Now, that if they were to get the number one pick, they would, you know, be very tempted to trade out of it. And this is awful. I literally just this morning saw someone put out a mock 27 draft.
Sure,
and never too early. Jeremiah Smith, I think, was second, and I can't recall who they had first. But I don't think it was a quarterback. But I think unless you need a quarterback, why not? I'm convinced he's been the best player in football the last 2 years and will be again this coming year. So now I've got a question for you. Okay, we're doing this quiz. What team had the most picks, draft picks this year? It's the obvious answer. It is Ohio State with 11. Mm-hmm. Two teams had 10 picks. Want to guess who those two teams are?
Was one of them Notre Dame?
No.
Oh, man. Boy. My other guess would be, I have two other guesses, and I bet they're both wrong. Oregon and Alabama.
Alabama, yes. Texas A&M was the other.
Really?
At 10. Hmm. But here's where what's interesting to me, and I'll give you the numbers. With 9 picks, Clemson, Miami, and Texas Tech.
Okay.
Texas Tech, they bought a lot of talent, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Clemson should be ashamed of themselves. And as I say that, next in line with 8 picks, Georgia, Indiana, which kind of, you know, the fallacy of thinking they weren't a very talented team. Georgia, Indiana, and Penn State, who should also be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, they should. Yep, that's fact. Way to go, James.
When you have, you know, that kind of talent, I think it's an indicator. It doesn't tell you everything, but it certainly tells you something about these teams. And, you know, I think Ohio State is the example. I'm convinced year after year they are the most talented team in the country.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't remember, you know, I don't know. I think USC probably still has the most produced NFL draft picks. I don't know what the number is anymore. But Ohio State, if they're not up there, they've got to be getting close. Because they these last, really since the Urban Meyer era, they've just produced an unbelievable amount of NFL-level talent on a regular basis. And again, what a great recruiting pitch in this new era. Like, they've always had a good recruiting pitch, don't get me wrong, but it's one that is still going to appeal. You can compete for Big Ten and national championships, and you can get selected in the first round of the NFL draft.
Exactly. And, you know, if you look at the I know it's less important now in the day and age of the transfer portal, but every year they have a top 5 recruiting class. Every year. And, you know, to defend James Franklin a little bit and his record against Ohio State, in his more than a decade at Penn State, only once did he even have a top 10 recruiting class. So he never had as much talent as Ohio State did. All right, Dustin, that is it for our draft post-draft show. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you. Hopefully you'll join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.